You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family. Find out more about them on our website, kfuo.org. I am so excited about this week. It is a week where we get to celebrate and give thanks to God for our missionaries and learn about family life for our missionaries serving the Lord all around the world. And so such a pleasure today to have the Reverend Roy and Eliza Askin serving the Lord in Hong Kong joining us via Skype. Now, if you're doing the math, you probably realize that this time is probably around close to midnight, 11 and midnight in Hong Kong. So this program has been pre-recorded to accommodate not to have the Askins family stay up too late this evening. So joining us now via Skype, the Askins family. Pastor Roy, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Eliza, welcome Hello. To Faith and Family. Thanks so much for being my guest, and I can't wait to learn about your service in Hong Kong. Let's start with how the Askins family began. Where did the Askins family meet? Where did Roy and Eliza meet? How did your family begin? Who wants to start with that?
We actually met at Concordia University, Wisconsin. We were both RAs in the same staff on the east side, and over a year just mm-hmm. got to know one another. And from there, we ended up at the Fort Wayne Seminary after having toured both in the same packed weekend.
both seminaries, yeah.
And so, but at the time, we weren't married yet when we toured them.
No.
We knew we were getting married in November. And so Roy started seminary that year while I finished my student teaching in Wisconsin. We got married Thanksgiving weekend in November of 2005. And Monday you were back in class and yep. I was back student teaching. And so we actually lived apart for the first three months of our marriage. I moved down when I graduated in January. And we continued there in the Fort Wayne Seminary through his STM year.
Mm-hmm. So Eliza is actually originally from Wisconsin, the Oconomowoc, Dousman area of Wisconsin. I'm originally from Plano, Texas, so I tell people we have a cross-cultural marriage preparing us for the experiences we have now. So I decided to go. I wanted to see snow for college, so I went up to Concordia University, Wisconsin, which is where we then ended up meeting. So in seminary, actually my vicarage year, we had our first child. My STM year at seminary, we had our second child, and we have
three now in Texas.
Three now in Texas, and we're going to have our sixth child anytime now here in Hong Kong.
Wow. Well, thanks be to God for the many blessings of your growing family. Let's talk about how you came to these vocations. I know, Eliza, you were studying to become a teacher. When did you know that you wanted to study education and be a teacher?
Being a teacher was the only thing I had ever wanted to do since I was a child. I would play school when I was in school, and even before then, I had an aunt that I really looked up to as a school teacher, and I just wanted to be like her. And then I had teachers myself throughout the public school system that had really left an impression, and I wanted to do what they were doing. But I chose to go to Concordia so that I could teach in a Lutheran school. And I student taught then both public and Lutheran in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. After that, I taught a couple years while Roy was at seminary. But once we started having our own children, I realized that I wanted to be home with them and educating them. And so since he had been homeschooled in high school, it was kind of an easy decision for us that we would just homeschool. And it actually has been very helpful with his vocation as pastor, because as we have to travel or as his schedule is sometimes tight during the day, it allows for us to homeschool with our kids and then be with him in the evenings. And especially here now, instead of having to like plunk them into a school where they don't know the language, they don't know the culture, we can start with homeschooling, and if we choose later to put them in an international school or a local school, we can do that, but we can get our feet settled here before actually jumping in.
Roy, when did you know that you wanted to attend seminary and go on to serve as a pastor?
Sure. I had always considered the option as a young child, and all the way up through high school. I had my uncle, actually great uncle, was rather influential in my life. He baptized me, confirmed me, married me, and ordained me. So his influence is certainly pretty significant, Pastor Robert Hill. And I had always considered following in his footsteps. When it came time to apply for college, I applied to a couple of different places, but actually the Lord provided fairly significantly for me to go to Concordia University, Wisconsin. And then as soon as I started attending classes, I realized that's what I wanted to do. I really enjoyed studying the text of Scripture in the original languages, especially the Greek and the Hebrew. I enjoyed digging into theology and talking and doing theology. And then once, you know, I was at seminary, even more so, just this opportunity to proclaim the gospel and share the Christ's word of forgiveness through word and sacrament really became central to the work that I was looking forward to. So, it was something I'd always really considered, and it was really when the Lord provided through various ways for me to attend Concordia University, Wisconsin, that it became a reality.
And so now, having attended seminary and serving in the field, when did you start thinking that serving the Lord in international missions was something for you and for the Askins family? When did you all start giving consideration to serving as international missionaries?
So it was about September 2014 or 15. Not to put too sharp a date on it. September 2014. We had talked about it at seminary, but just kind of briefly, never really considered it. It wasn't until I received a phone call from somebody saying, we're looking for a very particular skill set, and we are looking for somebody to do this work, particularly in Hong Kong. And so I went home to Eliza. I said, I got a phone call today, and they want me to consider being a missionary in Hong Kong. And she said, no way. And a year later, here we are. 2 years later, here we are. so actually, we had always thought about it. This was a great opportunity in the sense of being able to proclaim the gospel, not only in a congregation, as I do help in one of the congregations here locally, but also to assist with the proclamation of the gospel all over Asia in a whole number of ways. And so after talking with Pastor McMiller, who called me, and talking about it with other pastors in the area that I knew, we decided to pursue this further. Of course, it was very daunting and very, very, in some sense, kind of frightening to leave a familiar situation, leave your home and those things that you know. And at the same time, it was really kind of exhilarating at the same time as well. So, what do you think?
Eliza, what do you think about this whole opportunity to serve as international missionaries?
I don't recall talking about it at seminary, or if we did, it was probably more so of like a Latin America or Spanish speaking region, because I had studied Spanish in school. And so when he came home and he said that they had asked, I was set back, like just flabbergasted. But as we've gone through the process, it has become very intriguing and such a blessing to know that we can be here in this place and we can be living our daily vocations and yet reaching out to people who have never heard the word before and who see us with our six children and smile and ask, you know, like, why do you have so many, or are you going to have more? And that opening the door to be able to say what the Lord provides and then using that as a stepping stone to share the gospel with them and to give our children the opportunity to share the gospel in a different culture that has different idols than what they're used to, that has very physical idols that they may not be used to in our own culture, but now they can put those together with the stories that they've read in the Bible, and they can then share that with their friends that they've met here too also. It's been a wonderful experience.
So you considered this opportunity and then accepted the call to serve the Lord in Hong Kong, went through orientation, spent some time, I'm sure, gathering support And tell me about making that transition to Hong Kong and what you did to prepare to go to Hong Kong. Tell me about that time in preparation.
NSM, the network supported model, can be very trying on a family and very grueling to pack up your family each week or each weekend and head to a different location while you still have connections where you are. And to teach your children that change is okay, and to teach your children that you're not losing your friends, you're having the opportunity to make new ones. And so we went through some days that were harder than others, but we realized that those hard days have really prepared us for being in the field in a different culture itself. It has made the transition easier because we've already borne many crosses before actually getting to Asia. And the Lord has seen us through those crosses, and we have relied on Him and trusted Him. And so now here, the challenges don't necessarily seem as big.
As daunting. Yeah.
As daunting, yeah.
Yeah, no, and I find that definitely to be the case, that the transition to the field was certainly made much easier by the NSM model, as difficult as this can be. And I know your question was about transitioning to Hong Kong, and we'll get there. It's just that understanding kind of this idea with the NSM model, where the missionary goes out and raises support, not just financial, but all kinds of support for the work, helps the family transition into the new circumstances they're going to see in the field. So, for instance, while we were doing NSM work, you know, there were numerous trips where I would leave with one or two children, or but just by myself, and I would be gone for a week or two, or the whole family. We did this a number of times too. We would pack up and basically live in a 12-passenger van for a couple of weeks while we travel around and visited churches. And you would visit a new church every Sunday, and two or three during the week, if not more. And so the children got used to visiting other congregations, seeing other people, seeing other circumstances, and also just kind of got used to having constant change in your life. This is one of the things that we're learning about in the mission field, is that it's constant change. You really can't plan on anything, especially here in South Asia. One of the area directors here in South Asia says the only thing you can plan on is that there will be no plans. It's just constant change. And so doing the NSM work beforehand, as hard as it was a great preparation for the transition to Hong Kong. Now, for us, the transition to Hong Kong was a little different than other cultural circumstances. Hong Kong is very Western in a number of ways, at least on the surface. Deep down, it's still an Eastern culture, but it appears very Western. So for us, the transition was actually more a transition going from a small community in East Texas to a very urban community. So where we lived in Livingston, Texas, where I served before, there was a population density of, what was it, I don't know, 500 per square mile or something like that. Whereas here in Hong Kong, the population density is 17,000 people per square mile. And so it's a very different way of life, transitioning from this small community to this very, very urban community. And that's probably been more of the transition for us.
That in community living, we haven't lived in an apartment complex or a dorm situation or a building of other multiple families since seminary. We had our own home in Texas with a fenced-in backyard in which we could just let the kids go out and play. And we had a dog that they played with in the backyard. They could ride their bikes on the street. That's not the same situation here. We live in the same building as a couple other families. There is a courtyard, but the courtyard is not the same as your backyard because half of it is concrete and half of it is narrow dirt path. But the children have been very creative and imaginative and found ways to make the courtyard a play place for themselves. And they've had then built-in friends because the building houses three missionary families. And that's also helpful in that showing our children they're not alone in their faith here in Hong Kong, that there are other Lutherans for them to be part of this larger congregation here.
In fact, well, that's actually been one of the key things that we've noticed, you know, as we were doing traveling with network supported, doing the NSM work, raising support beforehand, but also here in the field, is the importance of devotions and regular family, not necessarily only devotions, but regular family time gathered around the Word of God and the Catechism. So every morning here in the regional headquarters where we live with those three other families, we've got devotions every morning at 8:30, Monday through Friday. When we were traveling on NSM, while we were in a different person's house a lot of times, you know, two or three times a week, the children could depend on the fact that every night we would gather and do a quick order of service, and we would have a reading from the Word of God, and we would talk about the Catechism and the Scriptures. Same thing here in Hong Kong. I might be gone, but the children know that every morning at 8:30 there's a chapel downstairs, and then before they go to bed, there's going to be a short order of service, and we're going to read the Word of God. And so that sort of grounding and regular study and regular reflection and meditation on God's Word has been absolutely key to helping us transition into the field as well.
Living in the community, how has have there been challenges in terms of language difference and adjusting to that?
Hong Kong, like Roy said, is very urban.
Very Western.
There are a lot of expats from various Western cultures here, and so English is widely spoken. Just today, we were talking to a woman at the hospital because we had an antenatal appointment.
Prenatal. They call it antenatal here. It's prenatal.
But she said she's Korean, but has lived in Hong Kong, but she didn't ever actually pick up the Cantonese because even for the number of years she's lived here, English has been sufficient in getting by. And so we have not started studying the language. We want our children to learn that extra language just because we see a value in knowing more than one language. But we have been able to communicate with most people, whether it's through the little English they know, or it's through hand gestures or pictures. Taxi drivers, if they're not sure, we just show them the map on our phone. So technology has really bridged the gap of the language barrier. And even at the wet market where we do our produce shopping, we'll just type into Google Translate something and it'll spit it out for them. And they might look puzzled at a minute and then they'll show it to somebody else and, oh, no, somebody will have it figured out. I've had more than one occasion where I've been standing there trying to purchase something, some type of nut or a green raisin or something, and a different person will come up who speaks both English and Cantonese and will just start translating for me in between me and the seller.
So the other thing, too, is the building where we live, the other two families are also LCMS missionaries. So the only LCMS missionaries live in this building. And so that's actually been a great blessing as well, because we actually have our own little Lutheran community here in this building, which has been really, really helpful and encouraging, both for the children as well as, you know, for the other families. So
language has, while it presents somewhat of a challenge, it's not insurmountable, especially with very international and Western culture of Hong Kong and technology. What about other things about the culture that have been created a learning curve for you? What are some of the things that you've been learning about culture in Hong Kong?
I would say one thing is the bathrooms. Sometimes there are toilet seats and sometimes there are not. And to this day, you still see signs in bathrooms that say don't stand on the toilet seats. Because culturally that they used to just stand over seats, and then you have to remember to bring toilet paper with you at times because there may not always be some in the bathroom, or it may have been in a dispenser on the wall before you get into the stall, which, you know, my husband laughs, but as a mother, it can be like, oh no, shoot, I forgot toilet paper. Now I'm working with this child. Okay, just hold it until we get home because we're not sure. And so that's a little bit different. Or in the United States, there are stores usually have their own bathrooms. Not here. you'd have to walk down the street and find like the public restroom, or maybe one store has it. And so that, you know, just making sure everybody goes to the bathroom before we leave the house is a big thing.
Well, one of the other major differences, and of course we're thinking about this now as Eliza is due in, a week with our sixth child, is actually the process of having a child is much different here in Hong Kong. I suppose the process is the same, but the way the hospital is much different in the sense that in the United States, they kind of treat you like a customer in the hospital. But here in Hong Kong, it's different, where you provide all of your own supplies and you don't have a private room. It's a group. Usually you're in a group of ladies. And so it's just kind of a much different aspect in terms of having children. And it's those things that you don't expect that kind of throw you off a bit, especially here in Hong Kong, where, like I said, it appears very Western, but there are things under the surface that you discover later on that are more surprising. Another example being, we've had some construction work going on in our flat for quite some time on various things. In the States, you'd call up a company and they would come and do their work, and they would probably work on your job, you know, every day until they got it finished. Here, the company, you call them, oh yeah, we'll be there tomorrow, and they might be here in 2 or 3 days, maybe next week, you're just not really sure. And then they'll show up and they'll do some, and then they'll be gone for another week, and then they'll come back a few days later. And it's just kind of a much different, much more relaxed, I guess, view in terms of getting those things accomplished and doing that work. And once again, like I said, it appears very Western, but it's still a very Eastern kind of world and mindset.
So there certainly are some cultural differences. We'll talk about food in just a little bit as you make that change, and I'm sure, and we'll talk about the children and what they're learning in the culture and their experience there as well. Glad that you are on the ground, and congratulations on the next child, the sixth child to be joining the Askins family. That's very exciting. Glad that we were able to catch you right before this child is born, so we can learn all about the Askins family. I know it's about to be a real busy time for the Askins family with another child on the way. We need to take a quick break. When we come back from that break, we'll continue our conversation with the Askins family serving the Lord in Hong Kong. You're listening to Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Wisconsin in Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. CUW.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
The United Nations uses your tax dollars to pressure and coerce pro-life nations into legalizing abortion. During the UN's 5-year review of Paraguay, they put intense pressure on the pro-life nation. Paraguay's National Chamber of Deputies issued a thundering rebuke by passing a resolution protecting the right to life of unborn babies from the moment of fertilization. And they urged the pro-life president to encourage other Latin American nations to declare 2016 as the year of the right to life. Boy, talk about speaking truth to power. I pray other countries will have the courage to stand up to the United Nations when it acts like a big thug, trying to force nations to kill its most precious renewable resource, their unborn babies. Every life is a gift from God.
Follow us on Twitter at Life Issues USA and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Worldwide KFUO salutes our day sponsor on this Tuesday, September 20th, 2016. Today's day sponsor is Frank Kern. Today's day sponsor has made a contribution to Worldwide KFUO in loving memory of his dear wife, Marilyn Kern.
Once again, we say thank you to Frank Kern of Rolla, Missouri, today's worldwide KFUO Day sponsor.
God's word is our great heritage and shall be ours forever. To spread its light from age to age shall be our chief endeavor. I'm William Whedon, LCMS Director of Worship, inviting you to be sure and join us as we romp through chapter after chapter of the Sacred Scriptures, rejoicing in the salvation that's ours in Jesus Christ. Join us.
Thy Strong Word, weekday mornings at 11 on Worldwide KFUO. Underwritten by Lutheran Heritage Foundation, lhfmissions.org.
Hi, this is Rich Robertson, President and CEO of the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. I was just thinking about the word extension and how that fits so well with our church body. We don't just hear the sermon. We are charged by the gospel and motivated to act upon it. We reach out a helping hand and use the gospel message to heal a broken world. Your investment with LCEF makes loans and services readily available to fulfill the Great Commission and extend God's kingdom. To learn more, visit lcef.org.
The majority of our support comes from individual listeners just like you. We appreciate you so much. However, a portion of our support is from underwriting partners. What is underwriting? Well, underwriting is when an organization, a church, or a business makes a financial gift to KFUO in support of our broadcast ministry. As part of our underwriting partnership, KFUO gives the underwriters on-air announcements to spread the word and inform you, the listener, about their business or mission. Do you believe that KFUO and the worldwide proclamation of the gospel is worthy of your support? Do you have a business, organization, or ministry that could benefit from being a KFUO underwriter? If so, contact me, Gary Duncan, at 314-996-1511 or email gifts@kfuo.org and let us know you would love to be a KFUO underwriter. We'll help you get your message out as you help us reach the world with the good news message of Christ. We are listener-supported. KFUO, the messenger of good news.
KFUO, the messenger of good news. God said to the serpent, "I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your offspring and her offspring. He shall bruise your head, and ye shall bruise his heel." Worldwide, KFUO at KFUO.org.
You're listening to Faith and Family. It is Missionary Family Week here on Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO. We are talking with the Askins family. They're serving the Lord in Hong Kong, the Reverend Roy and Eliza Askins, and their ever-growing family, and learning about their life and service in Hong Kong. Before we went to break, we were talking about some of the cultural differences, learning to get by with the language difference and some of the other cultural differences. Let's talk a little bit about the cuisine and that part of culture in Hong Kong and what it's like learning to adapt to a different diet and the food of Hong Kong. What are some of the things you like and some of the things that have been perhaps really unusual or maybe even challenging to adapt to?
First of all, something that sticks out immediately is our youngest son was eating soup made with Chinese melon, and it has a very strong, pungent, bitter taste. And he bit into it and he said, "No, please don't make this ever again." And then it was reheated for leftovers another day for Roy, but he saw it and fell into tears because he was afraid he was going to have to eat it again. And he said, no, you don't have to eat the melon again. You're okay. But for the most part, they've been willing to try new things. We were fortunate that we live pretty close to what's called a wet market, where you can go and you can buy your fruits, your vegetables, your raw meat, your eggs, your butter, most things, dried things of all sorts. I don't even know what half the things are. Some look like squids, mushrooms, beans. But it would be like a farmer's market on a larger scale. And we go there and find shrimp, live shrimp from the ocean, and crabs. And so we've done that a couple times. And the children just think it's so neat to bring home this crab and throw it in the pot. They want us to get one of those huge king crabs. And we don't have a pot big enough. We can't do that. So they've been intrigued with the seafood. They do enjoy that. there are a lot more soups here. And for us right now, it's still very hot and humid. And so we find it a challenge to eat soup when it's around 100 degrees outside and 100% humidity. But the locals will still eat soup quite frequently.
Fruits. We've had a number of new fruits.
We've had new fruits. We had gold kiwis. We've had dragon fruit, which the kids really enjoy. I think the draw there is because it looks so neat. On the outside, it's pink, and it almost looks like there are flames coming out of it with green tips. And then you cut it open, and it's white with all these little black speckles. And so they enjoy the dragon fruit. We did try durian.
Okay, so durian is this really interesting fruit, and it has such an obnoxious smell that is actually banned on subways in many major cities. You can't actually take it on the subway or you'll get fined. But they really enjoy it. And I haven't tried it, but Eliza did.
Yeah, the kids and I were walking through the wet market with a friend, and somebody was buying one and having it cut, and the person was gracious enough to offer us a sample. And so all the children tasted it and turned up their noses because at first it tastes fine, but it has a lingering aftertaste that sticks with you all day long, and its texture is kind of gooey. And so they were, nobody wants to try durian ever again. they did that once, and that was fine. But we've been able to find most foods that we were used to in the States. Now, the fact of the matter is you may just have to pay more than you're used to for those. So we've had a combination of local foods and Western foods. But the wet market has the same kind of cucumbers and carrots and tomatoes that we're used to having. So we still do a lot of vegetables. We are fortunate that at our wet market, there's also a pork person who has pork actually raised and butchered in Hong Kong. They caution you about pork outside of Hong Kong just because not all of the safety regulations are the same. And so we still have been able to have pork. Ground beef is a little bit more expensive, so we don't have it as frequently as we did in the United States, but we still every once in a while have that spaghetti dinner because you can get noodles and you can get sauce. And it just varies on the store that you go to. Some grocery stores are set up more for Westerners, and so they will have things like your Kraft macaroni and cheese and your Hunt's ketchup, whereas others are more Asian, and I couldn't even tell you what brand it was because it's in Chinese. But you know that it's ketchup, or you know that it's beans of some sort. We've been to a few restaurants that we've tried some dim sum, which is little, not appetizers, but like small balls of things, of dough balls or rice balls that have something inside. And you can get some that are sweet and some that are savory. Of course, the children usually prefer the sweet ones. But the ones with pork in them and shrimp in them have been pretty tasty too. Mm-hmm. That is a difference. Sweets are not as sweet as what we were used to in the States. They're not a big dessert culture or a very sweetened dessert culture. And so if you order cake or something, it won't be quite the same as what you had expected in the States. But our children have not suffered hunger. They've been eating just fine.
So I actually, because of my responsibilities in the region, I've actually done quite a bit more traveling and visited quite a number of other cultures and actually have had to learn how to eat some interesting things. So I actually serve all of Asia, and I was able here recently. I was down in Indonesia. I also visited Bangladesh and Sri Lanka and learned to eat some of the more spicy foods, and they get pretty spicy down there. One of the interesting experiences that kind of sticks out in my mind, in the region we were in Indonesia, the Batak region there, one of their foods that they really like is actually a traditional Batak dish, is actually goldfish, cooked goldfish. And it's different here because when they give you fish, you don't actually get like fillets. they just kind of chop it all up. So it's got all the bones and stuff in there with it. And you have to learn how to eat around the bones. You have to learn how to eat with your hands around the bones, which is always kind of a neat experience. I think actually eating with your hands, those sort of dishes is actually helpful because then you can feel the bones and pull them out before you get them in your mouth. Whereas when you use silverware, you can't. So I've had to learn how to eat with my hands and how to eat all sorts of interesting dishes out here in Asia.
And talking about the fish that have all of its parts, mm-hmm. when we bought fish at the wet market, the man, I was with a friend who spoke Cantonese, and so he was communicating with her in Cantonese and was double-checking to make sure I really wanted it still with the head on because he knew that I was American and he knew that that's not really how we eat them. He said, no, we'll figure out how to cook it just the way that they do. And so he left it intact, and I mean, he gutted it or whatnot, but then we were able to steam it at home the way that they traditionally do it here.
So you've adjusted to the cuisine and the culture. What are your favorites when it comes to food in the culture there in Hong Kong?
I actually have come to really enjoy, once again, Hong Kong is a very international city. In fact, probably one of the most international cities. And one of the foods that I've come to enjoy here in Hong Kong, but also in traveling throughout the regions, is actually like Indian Sri Lankan food, where it's the curries and the chicken and the really spicy dishes with the rice. I've actually really come to enjoy that.
And so we've made curry at home also. And then we had to be away from our home while they were doing some construction work and ate a couple of times at a restaurant that had some really good curry. And the children, too, really enjoyed it. And they also took a liking to an Egyptian place that we went to. And maybe that's because they got to eat that with their hands, too.
What about you?
I really liked the Egyptian food. It wasn't quite as spicy as the Indian or the Sri Lankan, but just different flavors. A lot, being a Midwesterner, I grew up on casseroles and things like that that may not have had as much spice and spunk to them. Whereas here, there are flavors in every bite. Mm-hmm.
So the food has certainly created some adventures and some quality family time, it sounds like.
Yes.
Let's talk about education for the children. You mentioned earlier that a homeschool has been a choice for you that helps you make that transition. How is homeschool going?
It is going well. We have received curriculum through the mail. We had also brought some curriculum with us that we've started off with. We've set up one space in our flat dedicated to be the schoolroom. We've been fortunate enough that we found a local piano teacher through another expat family. And so that is a new thing that we can give to our children. And they are enjoying taking piano, and it's nice to have them then interact with this local woman on a weekly basis too. And to have her teach them in the traditional Chinese way that she teaches the other children that she has. She told us her youngest student is 2.5. We're not ready to start ours that young. And we've been to a local library, and it was neat for them to see both Chinese books and English books. We've also taken them into local bookstores here, and they too find it interesting to look through the different books that they have.
There's a lot of educational opportunities here in Hong Kong too, with the numerous museums, mm-hmm. And like aquariums and whatnot that they have here. Hong Kong, all sorts of opportunities like that. We went to a science museum. We made the mistake of going on a public holiday, however, and the building, the museum was packed. But because they're homeschooled, we can go any time of the week, and they can go and learn that way as well. I think we're going to take them to see some history at the Bruce Lee, or see Bruce Lee at the History Museum. They've got an exhibit on Bruce Lee as well. So the kids have actually been doing really well with the homeschooling. We actually have two readers and a third one who's getting pretty close to reading. Ava Maria has been is voraciously consuming books. Matthias, our second reader, he's 6 years old. He actually enjoys reading nonfiction more than fiction. So he reads all these what about books and talks about the various historical figures and events in history. So they're enjoying it, and they're doing pretty well at it. Right now, we're focused primarily on getting the younger ones to read, and then expanding from there. We tend to do a more of a classical model of homeschooling, which we found to be pretty effective and works well.
And Roy had mentioned the museums. Hong Kong, because they value that so much, the museum admissions are usually relatively cheap, comparatively speaking to the United States. And a lot of them have free days at least once a week, if not more. And this Heritage Museum that has the Bruce Lee exhibit has actually gone to be free every day of the week in the time that we've been here. So they value having people come to those places also and do further learning and study. And just in, I don't know, like a mile radius of where we live, there are more schools than I can count on my hands. So you see a lot of education. Yeah, we've talked to other people who say it is very competitive here for education. They do have some schools that are a little bit more laid back, but they do have a tendency to send their kids to school as early as 18 months. And so it's, in a sense, I think it's helpful for us, because then to say to our children, you know, your friends are in school right now too. It's not, yeah. It's not that mom is just being an ogre by making you do schoolwork. Both your local friends, as well as the other Lutheran children in the building, are in school.
Yeah.
It's just highly valued here.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the mission that you've been called to serve in there. Roy, you mentioned you travel, and that there are many others that they're in the building that you gather with to gather around the Word. What is the work that you are called to do? How are you serving the Lord in Hong Kong?
Sure. I've been called as Director of Communications for Asia. And so the Asia region is actually the largest region of OIM, Office of International Mission. In fact, within the region, if you just count, you know, population-wise, it's a little over 3 billion people that are in this region. So it's quite a large region. And my responsibility is, I have numerous responsibilities actually in the region. On the one hand, I do work with our missionaries and those throughout Asia, helping them stay together and helping each other communicate, so that as a region, we're all working together and communicating the same goal and mission, which is to proclaim Christ and Him crucified through word and sacrament. But I also have a number of other roles as well. One of them is actually helping our partner churches communicate the gospel as effectively as they can in their own countries. So part of this is, for instance, helping them develop websites, helping them put together radio programs that they can use to broadcast the gospel. I'm also helping with our area directors in putting together translation work and keeping track of translation work, so that when one of our partners comes to us and says, hey, we could really use this many catechisms in Cantonese, I help them find those and get a hold of those resources. But the other thing, and this actually is a great opportunity we have, is actually to proclaim the gospel through podcasts and through radio in the language of the people. So we're putting together a kind of a network of podcasts where missionaries, but then also local church pastors, record lectures on the catechism, record lectures on the scriptures, record sermons, and then have this as a database online. We're still putting this together, but have this as a database of resources in the language of the people in the various countries for people to hear and learn about the gospel in those ways. So that's some of the work. The other work that I do is actually telling the story back in the U.S., writing stories for the communications team, writing stories for the LCMS website, and telling that story, because people aren't aware of all the great opportunities we have to proclaim the gospel and even really what it means to proclaim the gospel in word and sacrament. And so a key aspect is actually telling that story back in the U.S. So this means I have a lot of travel. I visit a number of different countries and meet with the missionaries, have them tell their stories, record those stories. I've done a number of audio interviews similar to what we're doing here, but shorter and with our missionaries abroad, and then shared those on the LCMS website. So we have a number of stories lined up in the coming months, so stay tuned for those.
Very good. Very good. What has been most challenging in terms of taking on these new responsibilities and serving as a missionary? What's been most challenging? What's been most rewarding or enjoyable for you?
Some of it has been re-gearing to a different role. So in the parish, I spent a lot of time really in the Word of God and preparing for sermons and studying and preparing for Bible classes and that sort of work. Whereas here in the field, I do some of that. We have a local church that the chaplain here in the region has started, Emmanuel Lutheran Church. It's actually a church of the Hong Kong Synod. It's just that it's an English-speaking church that we've been serving as missionaries. I assist with that church. So occasionally I'll preach. I've preached there a couple of times, and I'm leading a Bible class there now. So I still do some of that. But it's also been a shift in the sense of I do more email now. I do more of this, sitting down at the desk behind a computer screen, doing more work that way. And it's been kind of an adjustment to shift to that sort of aspect of the work. At the same time, it has to be done. And I think that being able to approach this with a theological eye and being able to take this work and look at it through the lens of that I received at seminary is actually quite helpful. In terms of rewarding work, what's been especially rewarding is seeing our partner churches or potential partner churches in these various countries and their longing for the gospel, their longing for Lutheran doctrine and Lutheran teaching. I visited one country, and I won't give you the name because at this point we're not sure we can publish stories about it, because when I went to go visit, the pastor told me as we were going to his house, it was about an 80-mile drive, and it took us about 12 hours to do it. But en route to his house, he told me that two Muslims that very day had been at his house asking questions about what he was doing and keeping tabs on him. After I left, about 2 or 3 weeks after I left, one of his deacons had actually been attacked by some Muslims and actually hurt fairly significantly by some of these radical Muslims. And so, but what's amazing is this man is so bold that he still wants us to tell this story. He said, this is who we are. We are Lutherans, and we're proud to be Lutherans, and this is the doctrine that we hold to, and we want the world to know this is what we believe, teach, and confess about what we believe in Jesus Christ. And so what's been really rewarding is the opportunities to see these Lutherans around the world in circumstances where the persecution is quite harmful, and yet they're unwilling to give up this teaching of what it means to be justified by grace for Christ's sake through faith. That's actually been really, really rewarding. I never thought I'd have opportunities to see this sort of stuff and to talk to these sort of pastors and these sort of parishioners who long for this. But that's been especially rewarding.
Eliza, as a wife and a mother, and making this transition from American to Asian culture in Hong Kong, what has been most challenging in your vocations?
I think the greatest challenge is probably not having the backyard that we once had, because they're children and they need to get out and get their exercise. But we find other ways. Sometimes we have to play hall ball and we just deal with a nick here or a scrape there. And as much as I enjoy not having to drive myself around anymore, like not having our own minivan, there are days here and there when it would be much easier if I could just load them all up into the van and just take them to the park or something. Because right now we walk everywhere, or we get a taxi, and the maximum occupancy for a taxi is 5, and I have 5 children. So I can't, there are times when they will let us do, squeeze all in, but technically that's 6 people in a 5 passenger. And so we walk and we take the MTR, and it's constantly looking over your shoulder to make sure that you have your whole gaggle and that you haven't left one behind. But it has been very rewarding to see them feel comfortable in this place, to see them want to meet other people or be willing to engage the other people, even when they're being mobbed and asked for their pictures, them smiling and saying yes and asking these people questions and wanting to engage the community here.
Anything else about life for the kids in Hong Kong that that's been most enjoyable for them, or that they're where they're really thriving?
Let's see. They have met some local friends that they really enjoy going and spending time with, and trying their new cuisines that they're not used to. They have thrived in serving in both the chapel services and the divine service on Sundays. Our two older boys have had the opportunity to be acolytes, and our oldest daughter is the altar guild.
Yeah, she's about 8 years old, and she does almost everything for the altar guild, I think. She sets up for the service, and she takes down and cleans up afterwards. And Pastor Kolb, the regional chaplain, has done a really great job in training her and preparing her in that work.
Yeah, and so they have pride in their church, and they look forward to attending chapel and church services. Even the younger two, you know this is a daily thing and are excited about it, and are excited about sitting with the different people from our community in these services and sharing the hymnal with them, singing with them, praying with them. And so that is a place where they are thriving, which is wonderful, because we know oftentimes the devil attacks hard and furiously at missionary families. And we are blessed that our children have been protected thus far.
With baby six, number six on the way, certainly no cab rides now.
Well, that's how we have to get to the hospital, is in the cab. So.
Well, with baby number six on the way, I'm sure that the family is excited, and that'll bring changes to the Askins household as well. In the coming year, in addition to baby number six on the way, what else are we looking forward to?
In the coming year, I'm not sure. We have Alex will be coming back. So I stuck around an extra year for STM classes. I'm hoping to actually defend my thesis and get that finished up in the coming year. But I'll also be coming back to the U.S. for some meetings and symposia. What else are we looking forward to, dear? We have family coming, actually, for the birth of the child. My parents will be coming in a couple of weeks for the baptism. It'll be good to see Grandma and Grandpa, and I know Grandma and Grandpa are really excited about coming. And then Eliza's parents will actually be coming out in the coming year as well, which will be really great to see them and show them around Hong Kong, show them the sights of Hong Kong. And
very exciting, yeah.
Our children are also looking forward to the different Chinese festivals that come throughout the year. They hear about them. They know that some of the office staff has off for them, and so they look forward to, what is this? Why are they doing this? And so we just had the Mid-Autumn Festival with a full moon, and one of them was under the weather, so we didn't get to go to the parade, and they were all disappointed, but they had the opportunity to make their own lanterns at home, and we had our own little lantern festival on the rooftop then. And so they're eager about those things and learning more about the culture.
Well, how can we learn more about the Askins family and the Lord's work that you're doing in Hong Kong and Asia?
Well, there's a number of ways. You can go to lcms.org/Askins. You can find us there. We also have a Facebook page, Askins in Asia, and then a website as well, askinsinasia.com. Any of those will get you connected with us. You can also email me. My email address is roy.askins@lcmsintl.org.
Very good. Well, thank you both for being my guest today and sharing about your family and the mission in Asia. It's been a pleasure learning about the Askins family.
Thank you
so much, Andy. We appreciate it.
God's blessings. And certainly we'll be lifting up the Askins family on the arrival of baby number six. God's peace.
Thank you.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at kfuo.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online,
and on demand.